Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I am one of your hosts. My name is Alex Croson, and I'm sitting across from the indelible, the suave, the je je vive. What is that word?
I don't know. I think you just said something.
Casey Clapp.
I love you, Alex Croson.
Oh, buddy.
Thank you for that. I don't mean to bring it up, but it sounds like you're a bit exasperated right now. What have you been doing all day?
Casey, as you full well know, you and I have spent the last 5 hours?
5 hours.
On our taxes.
What fun, you guys.
Boy, oh boy, it's tax season here in the Pacific Northwest.
And all of the trees are crumbling and turning black and dying.
Certainly my heart is, Casey. Yeah. It's an aspect of business I just despise, of life, really.
Yeah, it is.
Capitalism.
Death and taxes, they say. It's the only two things you'll never avoid.
That's right.
Well, as it works out, I will admit, though, it is a problem of success. Our taxes would be really easy if we did not have a successful sort of thing going here. We had a bunch of people listening to us, and you know, so it's kind of like, all right, you know, we can complain, but at the same time, we must acknowledge that privilege that we are, you know, doing some good.
Yeah, we're doing all right. We made a little bit of money last year, and
now we have to tell the government about it.
Yeah, and Casey, let's do our annual reading of the numbers. I'll go first.
Yeah, sounds good. Tree one. 5.6.
No.
Tree 2.
Not those numbers.
Oh, geez, sorry. Anyway, we'll tell you guys sometime.
Yeah, we'll do like an... I don't want to promise that.
Yeah, we're going to cut this part out.
Casey, besides our grueling tax morning, we also...
taxing morning.
Wow.
Yeah, you missed that. You walked right over it.
Very well done.
If there was a snake, it would have bit you.
Yeah. I'm a little ashamed.
No, don't be. I should be also.
We have the joy and the honor of recording an episode today to cool off a bit.
Just chill out a little.
Release the steam vents.
Yeah, exactly.
And talk about a very cool tree, a much requested tree, I would say.
Yeah, it is.
The paper birch.
Yep, that's the one.
Now, you call it betula. Mm-hmm.
Betula.
Papyrifera.
Yes, that's right.
I call it betula. Papyrifera.
You know what? Some say betula, some say jacaranda.
That's
what are you
right.
going to do?
You know what we always say on the show?
Your cones are your own. Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
And your pronunciation of things.
And your pronunciation, unless it's horribly wrong, in which case you need to figure that out.
For many years, my friend George pronounced the word queue, like you're standing in a queue, as quay.
Oh,
because he had never heard it said out loud.
Yeah, he's just read it with all the E's and U's.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty reasonable. I think I would have, I mean, I like that. I like taking something and like doing it. I feel like that is what helps language change, doesn't it? A little bit, maybe?
Yeah. No? He also called our podcast offhandedly completely arboratory.
Ah, well, that's pretty good. Better than, what was it? Totally arbitrary.
Spelled correctly.
Yeah, perfect. That's
somebody recommended our podcast and said, you should listen to Totally Arbitrary.
Yeah, to Tobin Mitnick, and he was like, yeah, I was their first guest back then. Anyway, we also appreciate that listener for telling people about it. To be very specific, although we would have to say one correction to be made. The name
of the thing you're suggesting,
but we love you nonetheless. We pat you on the head, we give you a little rustle of the hair, we send you down and go get a juice from the nurse.
An ROTH, as they say.
Yes, exactly.
Casey, let's imagine, as we do every episode, that you and I are walking through a college campus, if you will, and we come across some very papery looking birch trees.
Yeah.
And I ask what they are foolishly.
Foolishly.
Casey, let's ID this tree.
All right, Alex. This is an easy tree to ID. Although it also has some nuances to it that kind of make it a little bit of more of a challenge.
Okay.
So you're walking over, you see this big tree, and it kind of has this form to it of an upright, scraggly looking poof ball. Mm. There's nothing like too like wow gorgeous about it. Its architecture is not stunning. It doesn't have such a perfect form to where you say, I must shed a tear on this soil for the beauty has taken me.
Wow.
You don't say that when you see a birch
tree. So dramatic.
Yeah, exactly. But that's the thing. Everyone thinks that that's what they're going to see when they see this tree. They don't. It's just a big poofy little green thing. It leaves from afar are somewhat see-through. Like, it's not a dense canopy like a beech tree, for instance. You could not even see through a beech tree canopy.
Okay.
But the birch tree, it's a very wispy-looking tree overall. Lightish green foliage. The leaves are doubly serrate and kind of in a triangular, chordate, heart-looking kind of shape.
Wow.
And
let's hold on. Threw a lot of terms out there. I know them. Probably a lot of our listeners do.
That's a good point.
But let's briefly go over those bullet points.
Yep.
Double serration
on the margins of the leaf.
This means that there are serrations around the edge of the leaf.
Yes.
But there are two serrations. There's serrations between the serrations.
There are serrations on the serrations.
Yes.
Yes. This is like a little tiny knife that has a fractal of a little tiny knife on each one of its little knife blades.
That a mouse might cut to use to cut his steak.
Exactly.
Chordate. Heart-shaped. That's
exactly right.
From the Latin... chordata coronary
etc.
Yeah. Those all come from chordata.
Exactly, meaning heart shaped, which is ironic because your heart is not shaped the way that they're talking about. So you know what I mean? Like the heart that we draw, like those two big lobes on either side that point at the bottom.
Yeah.
That is not, according to what I last saw, an actual human heart looks like.
Unless you're the Grinch.
I guess that's true, in which case, yeah, they have x-ray proof that that's exactly what the Grinch's heart looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah, good point.
When it beats, it goes, boom, 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 boom.
So these leaves are also, they're alternately arranged. So you're looking at this opposite, they're alternately arranged buds going down the stem. Very skinny stems. Leaves are small, skinny little twigs, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't need to be big. They're also... not like super pendulous, but they kind of go out and kind of hang down a little bit. It's not there's another species, the European white birch, some call it the silver birch over in Europe, and it is pendulous. It's called Betula pendula.
Oh.
And its branches grow up, its twigs hang straight down, so it looks like a big shag carpet or
interesting
like a woolly bear or something like that.
Like we talked about well, this isn't quite the same, but trees of heaven have that kind of like shopping bag look, like they're just holding a bunch of bags.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But those are not leaves, as I'm recalling. Those are seeds.
Correct.
Ignore me.
No one's going to do that, Alex.
Well, Casey, the real star of the show here, can we just cut the crap for once in our lives?
Jeez. You know what? I'm fine.
It's in the name, Casey.
It is.
Papyrifera.
Ah.
The bark.
Oh, God. It's a beautiful paper-barked birch tree.
Yeah.
And it's true. It has this bark that is sublime in its color, its shape, what it does. It is like the color of the trees that are behind the Appaloosa horses in those horse paintings that everyone has.
Yes.
It's what it is. And like that, it's... It's beautiful. I'll admit it. I'm with you.
It's very cherry-like. Is it a?
It is.
Are they related?
They are not related.
It's
other
the rose
than
family.
They're not in the same family at all. It's Betulaceae. It's its own family.
Okay.
The fruits of the birch tree are these little catkins, and a catkin is essentially a long central kind of axle. Let's call it kind of like a cone, but then around it is all the little flowers that come off. So it would be like a long central spike with a bunch of little flowers coming off. But they're in these like circular cylindrical things that hang down.
Yeah.
Some of those in some species in this family would be woody, like the alder. Others would be way harder, but only like they would fall apart halfway through. So this, they're called little nutlets. So their fruit is a catkin.
Wow.
With these little tiny nutlets, which are essentially these little tiny seeds that have these little wings around them. So they kind of flutter away.
They're kind of cool looking.
Yeah, they're not bad. I really enjoy them. I like to, you can find them hanging in the winter time and during the fall. So during the fall, they really start to just completely fall apart. But during the winter, you can actually see them hanging on the tree in a lot of times. And that lets you know that it's a birch tree. You can also see that with alder and some other species.
Well, let's get back to the bark, Casey.
Let's get back to the bark. It looks like cherry. Cherries have a completely different way of reproducing. They don't have these catkins. But their bark is doing essentially the same thing, where they have these horizontal lenticels
on
very, very thin bark. It's very thin, it's very smooth, and then these white line or these dark lines on the white bark that go chikoot, 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 and they kind of look like you know those little things that you spin and they make music, like a little music box kind of thing.
Oh yeah.
And then you have these like those little they're like cylinders, right?
Uh-huh.
And then each cylinder though has a little metal thing with a little bit that comes up,
like a little tooth.
Yeah, and then you spin it and it goes bing 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 bing. That's what I see, like if it was a big roll, or like a you know, pianos that play themselves.
Yes, the piano roll.
It looks like the piano roll.
Okay.
To me. That's what I mainly see.
A fine judgment.
Thank you. I everyone's listening, they're thinking, wow, this guy can describe stuff real good.
And I also, while we're defining terms,
mm-hmm.
these lenticels are, I like to think of them as like, when you've in a cartoon, when somebody farts so hard that they rip their jeans.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Because they're gas exchange
they
ports.
They are gas exchange ports on the tree. So you're saying that basically this tree is farting along its entire circumference.
And it rips the bark open.
The bark is just like, whoa!
Yeah.
Who ripped?
Right.
The birch did. It was birch, okay.
Is that good?
Yeah, I think that's good, honestly.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a fart joke and a tree term all put together.
Well, I'm not one for fart jokes. It wasn't even a joke. I mean, it really does look like...
It really does look like that.
Split pants.
All right, that is... I think that's fair.
It is an analogy I'm using.
Yes, I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying.
A practical analogy.
Yeah, which, it helps you remember it. Like, oh, what do those lenticels do? They look like split... Oh, yeah, I remember.
Yes.
I think it's good.
Two other characteristics of this bark.
Yes.
The paperiness, which we should talk about.
Yep.
And... the eyeballs.
Ah, yes, agreed. That was a question that came up a while back, wasn't it? In one of our shows, someone said, "What are these?"
Oh, the eyeballs.
Mm-hmm.
I know what they are.
Yeah. Well, you
do you want to say it? You're the tree guy.
No, go for it.
Those are where limbs have fallen off, and they don't compartmentalize.
Excellent.
So they just leave these big black spots that look like the shape of eyeballs.
Almost. They do compartmentalize. So it's essentially where the bark and the tree branch meet. So the bark isn't quite as smooth there, so it doesn't develop that same smooth characteristic where it does where there are no branches.
That's what I meant.
You got it right. And then once that, let's say you clip that branch off, the tree will then compartmentalize over that. And then over time, as the tree puts on new layers of wood, then all of a sudden it'll look like one nice big cylinder again, most likely.
Okay.
However, it also does have this beautiful papery exfoliating bark is the term.
Exfoliating.
The term de Provence.
Yes.
The bark every single year, instead of like in a ponderosa pine or any other fir, a lot of oak trees, every single year the bark keeps together with the bark that was made the last year.
So, say that again, please.
Yeah. So the bark, year one, then as year two happens, there's a new layer underneath. What?
Sorry I yelled at you.
That's okay. It was confusing. It was almost like a teacher being like, one more time, say it better.
Year one.
You have a nice, perfectly formed bark layer. Year two, another layer comes underneath it, right? Okay. Directly underneath it. The cambium just basically says pump, 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 and they get a new one.
Yeah.
So then as that happens, you then have a cylinder that's being built inside another cylinder. So the outer cylinder has to kind of split, right? Because it's now too small to fit inside or to have another one built inside of it that's a little bit bigger.
Right.
As the tree is expanding outwards from the inside. So it starts going. Older trees of oaks and other different kinds, they will keep all of those bits together and then a rip will happen, but the bark is so tough and so like combined with each layer that you start getting these big furrows like you see in a Douglas fir and all these other kinds of trees where you get these big furrows that are essentially rips on the outer bark, but they all still stick together. So you have these big, gigantic furrows of big, thick bark. When this happens to the birch tree, birches will not maintain those big, thick layers outwards. Once they start growing out and rips happen, essentially the outer bark like curls off and it's just like, I'm not needed anymore. And it just kind of disappears.
Wow.
So it doesn't actually stay together in all these big layers. Slowly but surely, it will always come off. Not always, I mean, over time.
So instead of furrowing, it just takes off.
Yes, and this is specifically the paper bark, as well as a couple other species. There's many different species of birch tree. So in this case, the paper birch and, say, the Jack Monti birch and the sweet birch, like these kinds have this bark that does it. Sometimes it's a little bit different colors, but like the European white birch, as it ages in the lower sections, it starts to get this really big, thick, furrowed bark where it doesn't exfoliate anymore. Then it starts to develop those big, craggy looking splotches.
I've seen other exfoliating bark trees that don't peel in the same way the paper birch does.
Yeah.
They sort of come off in like a camouflage, like patchiness.
Oh, yeah, sure, sure.
You know, what's one I'm thinking of? Like, what's one of those camouflage barks?
Yeah, the London plane tree does that, and the Stewardia does that, and the... another puzzle piece bark.
Eucalyptus.
I was going to say, it's a eucalyptus that's famous for. It's like a rainbow eucalyptus.
Yes, that's right.
That kind. Someone's going to correct me. I'm sure that's not the actual name of it. And then there's a few others. Definitely the London plane tree is famous for this.
Yeah, those exfoliate in more like flat pieces.
Ah, okay.
You know,
rather than a very strict puzzle piece. Let's see.
I'm saying those seem to exfoliate more... less curly in a curly way.
Yes, correct. Yeah,
the paper birch. Exactly, is it just because it's the paper birch bark is thinner?
You know, I don't know. It probably just has developed a lot of strength in the horizontal kind of tensile strength. But then when they rip, they kind of curl themselves up because they really like hold together. In fact, they're waterproof that way. You can flip them upside down, like over a bunch of wood or something you want to keep dry. People made canoes out of them for a long time. So I think that it has more to do with the bark is just stronger in that orientation. So then when it finally does rip, then you can like pull it off as one big thing.
Okay.
It's just the way it grows, as opposed to it kind of growing out, but then almost compartmentalizing. Just maybe it's just not connected, or they have different cell connections for whatever reason.
Sure,
yeah, I don't have a good answer for you.
I was just curious.
Yeah. Well, the way you can tell a paper birch is if it has this like bone white peely bark. It has to be both peely and bone white, and the bone whiteness and the smoothness will go all the way down to the ground. Other species, it will not go all the way down to the ground. It'll stay a little bit higher. However, there are trees that look very, very close to it. Another one's the Betula jackmontii, and a lot of times I think that's also, there's another name for it. It might have actually switched the name. It's called the Himalayan birch. And the Himalayan birch is... a very, very commonly planted tree as well. Looks almost exactly the same. They're extremely hard to pick out, like what the difference is between them. But the one's leaf is a little bit bigger and a little darker green and has, you know, maybe singular serrations or very small double serrations, that kind of thing. So they're, okay, they're really, really tough to tell apart. And they grow in completely different parts of the world. Himalayas versus essentially all of North America, from Washington, Oregon, Montana, Pennsylvania, north, but from the West Coast to the East Coast.
Hmm.
So very thorough in Canada. Canada's got them from start to finish.
Really? The paper birch?
Uh-huh. Paper birch specifically.
Casey, you mentioned that the paper birch is kind of scraggly and floofy.
Yeah, it is.
Is it a kind of a weak tree? Like, we talked about the willow and how you can just like blow on it and it'll explode,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, pretty much.
Is a paper birch like not a storm weatherer?
It isn't. It is not.
Okay.
It is a tree that is used to growing and living for maybe 50, 60, 70 years and then dying.
Crapping out.
Yeah. It doesn't have it's not like the best compartmentalizer ever. It does not focus on, you know, being super decay resistant. It is just kind of chilling. It'll grow up, send out a billion seeds, and then just be like, ah! Fall over.
That is a strategy.
It's a strategy, but it also just ruins everything because they are planted everywhere.
Wow.
Like, everyone thinks, oh, a beautiful birch.
Yeah, yeah.
They think it's great. And then they plant them all over the place. They grow up, and everyone's like, oh, it is really nice. And then an ice storm comes, and they're all just like, wow, and they break, and they turn into, like, these crazy snaggy-looking things.
Yeah.
Which, if you plant them, if they're growing in their native habitat, where there's snow and ice all the time, they just kind of take these conditions, but also they've been built by those conditions as they grow up, so the trees themselves are, like, architecturally not designed, but like reactive to that, because as they grow up, they get covered by snow, they get really strong, either withstand or they break and then regrow, and you get this like this tree that is able to withstand these conditions.
Hmm.
But you grow it in a nursery in Oregon and it has like almost no ice or snow to deal with whatsoever. Then it gets like that every 3 or 4 year ice storm, and then it just rips it apart, and you have this really disgusting looking tree that's like not even kind of that pretty in the first place. Well, everyone just wants to plant them because they have the bark, Alex.
This sounds like a lot of clapaganda.
This is a lot of clapaganda, and that is that. You know what? That's the way it is. You're listening to this podcast. You're going to get clapaganda.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's why we make it.
Well, before we get into the paper birch more, Casey, and the surrounding topic, which I have not looked at the document. It's I don't know
exciting.
What we're talking about today.
Yeah, you think we're going to be talking about something really scary and bad because, you know what, this is a, you know, we'll talk about it later.
Yes, and later is after the break. We'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary. Casey.
Hi, Alex.
You know something about me?
I do.
And you do know this. That I love to be cozy.
Yes, that is very true. Unfortunately, I have to get you out of your bed to do work, you know, because our studio here is small.
Yeah, Casey physically drags me out of bed every morning, and you know what?
Slap a pair of headphones on.
And you know what I'm sleeping on, Casey?
What are you sleeping on today, Alex?
My brand new Cozy Earth bedding.
Oh, Alex, I heard about this.
And you know what I'm sleeping in?
What?
My brand new Cozy Earth jogger set.
Ooh, hold on. Let me get a feel of that. Not your sheet. I'm getting my own sheet.
That's right.
Ooh, this is smooth.
Casey is wrapped in his new Cozy Earth bedding. Now, Casey just returned from Italy.
Just got back.
Land of soft fabrics.
Exactly.
And he has waiting for him products from our brand new sponsor, Cozy Earth. Casey, what do you think?
This is incredible. I don't think I've ever felt something so soft and so, like, I don't know. It feels silky and smooth and it looks beautiful.
It's true, Casey. And you know what? I have been sleeping in my Cozy Earth clothing.
Well, Alex, have you noticed anything about your sleep?
I have been sleeping so well. And here are some things I love about sleeping in my Cozy Earth bedding and my Cozy Earth clothes.
Yeah.
This is no longer officially an ad. This is just me talking.
Hey, let everyone just come on in. Just come on in here.
Casey, it is temperature regulating, so I no longer have any problems with getting too warm, getting too cool, having to get up and shut the window, having to get up and open the window, turn the heat on, turn the heat off. I sleep through the night. Soon I'll be eating solid foods, and I have such a good time doing it. Casey, I know you've been traveling, you've been flying, you've been not sleeping in your own bed. I cannot tell you how excited I am for you to try this brand new Cozy Earth bedding.
I cannot tell you how much I agree. Just feeling it, I'm essentially swaddled in a sheet right now, Alex.
Yes, right,
and
you are.
And I cannot tell you how excited. I'm going to wash this. I'm going to throw it on my bed today.
Hell yeah.
So if you want to be as cozy as Alex and I, then go to CozyEarth.com and after your purchase, enter the promo code TREES, T-R-E-E-S, to get 35% off. That's huge.
And Casey, how about this? All of Cozy Earth's products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. I don't have that kind of warranty on my tires.
I don't have that kind of warranty on anything.
So go to CozyEarth.com and use promo code TREES for 35% off. Now go and get cozy.
Yeah, you go get cozy now.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hi, everybody. It's Alex here. And you know what? Come springtime, those trees are a-blooming. Those people are a-walking around. That sun is a-shining. And it makes me so grateful for my social life. People are wanting to do things again. And it can be extremely rewarding to start to see friends more often and, you know, go on cute friend dates or romantical dates, sit on a patio and drink a coffee, ooh la la. But it's really easy to overdo it. And for me, it's very important to keep an eye on my social battery. Every time I go on a social outing, I come home and I'm like, wow, I am really tired in a very specific way. Well, that's my battery. That's my social battery being drained. And I didn't really have this language until I started going to therapy. I didn't know why being around people made me so exhausted, even though I love those people and enjoy being around them. But therapy helped me with my self-awareness and helped me unlock some language that I didn't otherwise have. And if you are struggling with feelings and thoughts that you don't understand, therapy can be a great way to unlock the power of understanding. And a great way to start is BetterHelp. It's completely online and it's designed to be super convenient and flexible, which is very important. How many times have you had a therapy session on the calendar and that time rolls around and you think, I gotta drive all the way across town. I am not gonna go. It has, of course, happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to everybody who's been in therapy. No worries with BetterHelp. It's all online. And all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, of course. And nobody nails it on their first time. It's like going on dates. You gotta find the right therapist for you. It's silly to think that the very first date you ever go on is going to be your future spouse. So you can switch therapists at any time, no additional charge. It's extremely easy. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/trees today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/trees. Happy spring! Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Why don't you? We're taking a stroll. See, this is the problem, Casey. I meant to say we're talking, but I accidentally said taken, and I decided to roll with it.
Oh, yeah.
But I couldn't think of anything to follow taking a stroll down a subject of a tree. No.
Yeah, there you go.
No.
Can I tell you a secret you probably already know?
What?
That's how I talk most of the time.
No shit.
I just accidentally say a word and then somehow try to pull myself out of it,
Casey,
by using other words.
I know this.
I know you do.
Everyone knows this.
Everyone collectively is like, Casey, that's not a secret, man. That's your most annoying trait.
No, it's just characteristic.
That's... I appreciate you.
Today we're talking the paper birch Betula papyrifera, or Betula papyrifera if you're nasty. Casey, I see that today we're talking competition in forests.
That's right, we are. That's right, we are.
I'm going to let you take the ball and run with it.
Okay, I appreciate it.
But I will be right behind you, blocking for defense, and into the end zone we go.
Yep, here we go. Here we go, and the birch grows up.
It's good.
All right. Okay. So I was kind of alluding to a little bit of some, I think the term was that you used is clapaganda.
Yes.
Fabulous term, by the way. About how much I just don't really like this tree.
Sure.
Before we get into what I don't like about this tree, I want to get into what I love about this tree.
That's a bad sign.
I want to make sure that I give this tree what it deserves, where it deserves it.
Before you tear it apart?
So, you've heard of the book. We've talked about it multiple times. Finding the Mother Tree by Suzanne Simard. Now, this book has gotten lots of press lately. We're going to give it a little bit more.
Okay.
I'm nearly done reading through it. Everybody has, and if you haven't, go pick it up. You can find it on our website. You can also find it at your local bookstore, which we highly encourage.
Yes.
The thing about it is Suzanne Simard essentially is a forestry worker, was working for the forestry doing research up in Canada. And she actually went to Oregon State University, got her master's and a PhD. So that's my alma mater. Thank you for doing your best and then running back to Canada when you absolutely got shut down.
Coward.
No, no, no. I have to admit, anyone who is not a coward is not her.
Well, so, of course, I was kidding.
Yes, I know, because you had to run from... Yeah. Anyway, Alex...
Trying to fucking paint me into a corner.
No one puts Alex in a corner. Unless it's Alex himself. Sometimes he really feels comfortable there. So, as it works out, are you familiar with forestry, Alex?
Loosely.
Now, do you know the idea of replanting trees?
Yes, reforestation.
Exactly. So that has a lot of terms and a lot of connotations to it.
Okay.
In the forestry world, reforestation is just the laws that make you have to replant trees after you cut them all down.
Got it.
Now, if you do that, the companies are like, okay, we want to spend as little as money as possible on this acre of land for the maximum benefits. Like big trees, healthy trees, trees that are, you know, get a good profit. We want to get in there, cut them all down, and get them all out as efficiently as possible.
Typical.
Whatever we have to leave is a loss of profit. And sometimes you have to leave us snags, you know, for a different amount of forest habitat. You have to stay out of the creeks. You have to, not on this steep slope, these kinds of things, right?
Okay.
So it kind of always, you know, you lose a bunch in there. So they're like, get all the trees out. Once they're out, they're like, we don't want to come back in. The rules are you have to replant a tree. So if you replant a tree, the second thing that comes in about kind of forestry and trees and interaction is when you replant this tree, you want to make sure that there's nothing competing with it to grow, right?
Okay, that makes sense.
It does, doesn't it, Alex?
Oh.
Now, so here's where Suzanne Simard comes in. So what we just kind of quickly discussed is essentially you cut down a bunch of trees and then you have to replant the forest, in quotes, which is essentially a plantation to be cut down again at some other time.
Okay.
It's not quite rebuilding a forest. And the reason about this is long and convoluted. You'll have to go to patreon.com/arbitrarypod and sign up for a extra bonus episodes where we'll talk about that.
I'm not doing that.
Oh, come on, Alex. It's worth your time. In fact, if you go up to... Anyway, I'll skip over.
Use coupon code... No, sorry. I shouldn't have said that. We don't have any coupon codes for the Patreon.
So what it... as it works out is we have always thought of how do plants work? How do they interact? It's competition. Every plant for itself, every plant is going to be fighting. And if it cannot compete, it shall die.
Mm.
So very capitalist response to, you know, the way the world works. Who knows which came first, our idea that that's how nature worked or our idea of how we could view nature working that's similar to how we work, competition.
Interesting.
I don't know. This is not what we're talking about today.
It's an interesting thought.
Exactly. Let that you know, grow in your brain a little
brain exercise. Yeah.
So the idea though is, you know, if you have a bunch of trees, they must be working against each other because they're both trying to get up to the sky and take as much resources as possible to be the best that they can be.
Yeah.
So Suzanne started looking at the forest and being like, what is exactly, like, is this actually the case? Because she started noticing in these certain plantations that certain trees were just dying. Like, just what is going on? We've killed all the other plants that could be around competing with it, yet it's still just like turning yellow and just dying. What's going on?
Just on its own.
Just on its own. Yeah. So it's it's in a a big forest. It's in a plot of land that when there were trees on there, we called it a forest. You know,
a plot of land designed to grow things. So yeah. Why are these things dying randomly?
Exactly. And before we cut them all down, there was a big, huge, healthy forest that was untouched, that was doing great.
Yeah.
So why now, when we replant these little tiny seedlings, do they suck? Mm. Are they having such a horrible time? So she started noticing, and this had been noticed way before this specific researcher went out and said, what is this? Mycorrhizal fungi. We've talked about this before, Alex. You remember?
Have we ever?
Have we ever?
Well, should we give a quick defo, as they might say in England?
I think we should, mate. So the defo of mycorrhizal fungi is essentially a fungus that creates a symbiotic relationship with a tree or any other plant for that matter.
Yes.
Could be a grass, could be a bush, could be another, you know, several different trees. And there are a couple main kinds. The first one is, it's called ectomycorrhizal fungi or arbuscular, which is essentially they go into, or they go around, I'm sorry, those are two different kinds. Ecto just go around and they make this sheath on the outside of the roots.
Right.
And they interact with the roots, but it's essentially like you put yourself in a power glove and that power glove connects you to the internet.
Like the Nintendo power glove?
Very similar, except it's connected with strings to everything else.
And it works?
Yeah, and you don't move anywhere. Yeah, of course it works, yeah. So then that is the that is this one kind called ecto.
Ecto. Mycorrhizal fungi.
Yes, and then endomycorrhizal fungi is ones that go inside the actual the roots itself.
Yeah.
The endo is also called arbuscular because it kind of pops into the root and then whoop, makes a little tree-looking growth filament inside the root cell or the cell of the plant. And so it makes this connection where they actually like literally they're like braided into each other, where it's now the cell and the fungi are all just one big connection.
Okay.
So there's a bunch of other complications that come into this. We're going to kind of skip over it. But there's also some that only go on certain kinds of trees. There's ericoid mycorrhizal fungus, which only get on ericaceous plants. So you're anything in the ericaceae family, like arbutus, the madrone, and manzanita, and rhododendron, and huckleberries, that kind of thing.
What is the Peywen family?
Arcaria.
Arcaria, okay.
Yeah, and I don't know I don't know what kind that has.
That's fine.
But it certainly
was mixing up those two words.
Oh, gotcha. Yes. So basically, that's what mycorrhizal fungi is, and it comes from the Greek myco, meaning fungus, and rhizo, meaning root. So it's literally root fungus.
There you go.
So
great defo.
Hey, thanks, Mike.
Thanks for that defo.
So we ended up learning about these a long time ago, and we found like there are the vast majority of fungus that you find, fungi, that you find in the forest are mycorrhizal fungi.
Mm.
The vast not majority is going to be parasitic fungus that actually... Huh?
Minority.
Huh. Never heard that term before, actually. Did you just make that up?
I don't really see the world through that lens.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you. So I see worlds through major and minor minority. Or Matt, God dang it.
Major and minor majorities?
Yes, thank you. Oh, you're the most minor majority, so you don't get a lot of votes. So you have this idea of most fungus that's growing in a forest is growing in a symbiotic relationship with all of the plants that are growing there. And I mean like a huge majority. Mm. The other small fungus that are around are the parasitic ones that go in and they essentially latch onto something and slowly take its nutrients. There's other decay fungus that are saprophytic and they'll go in and kill things outright. Like they will actively attack and kill a living thing. But really they're eating it alive, essentially.
Wow.
Until it dies. Our malaria is an example of this kind of fungus. It's a parasitic fungus. So it'll get on a tree, it'll eat it, and it'll attack it, it'll destroy the roots, and that tree will die.
And does it just move on after that?
Yeah. Well, also, specifically, the our malaria can be saprophytic and parasitic. Saprophyte meaning it eats dead wood, essentially.
Wow.
And parasite meaning it attacks and lives on living wood,
living
plants. Yeah, so the tree dies and it's still just like, nom, 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 nom.
Now the party begins.
Yeah, exactly. So now it's not even trying near as hard.
Yeah.
But because of that, it can live on dead wood. So then a new tree grows in that area that's now got this fungus all within it, and that fungus will reach back out and try to attack the new living plant that's growing down there.
Hmm.
So, what do these new living trees do when they're living in a cesspool of parasites around them? They find a buddy to help them out. This is what Suzanne Simard started to find.
Okay.
Essentially, the common knowledge, the going rate was, you have a tree that's growing, a Douglas fir in this case, our old pal. Douglas fir is growing and having a fine time, but then is really starting to struggle after maybe growing a foot. Like, not big, like it's a little teeny tiny thing. And you have a birch that's growing next to it. The theory is, well, the Douglas fir is not thriving because the birch next to it is taking all the nutrients. It's taking away the shade. It's fighting it for things in the water or in the ground, like water and nutrients and things like mm-hmm. that. So they're like, you got to clear out all these competing other plants, and select for is the term. Select for the objective tree, which would be the Douglas fir. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah.
One more time.
Yeah.
I'm glad you understand it so thoroughly. So this was like the standard understanding. Competition. That's what it was. Always competition.
Right.
So Suzanne came back and she's like, well, okay, well, this doesn't make any sense because I look over here and I remember from my youth that little baby trees would grow up through very dense overstories or very complex multi-canopied storied forests.
Yeah, that's a common thing, right? You have your understory, you have your...
Mm-hmm.
story, and then you have your overstory.
Yeah, you got it. That's exactly right. There's multiple different stories. Uh-huh. It's like an elevator shaft.
Yeah. I mean, that's a building is not a bad analogy for
it really
a forest, right?
It's exactly the case. There's different things happening at all these different levels.
Yeah.
But in this case, they're mostly focused on like the resources, so the light that's coming through. So essentially what she started to do, Suzanne, was like, well, let's like see if there's something to this. Started asking the questions, are these trees working together? Because, for example, the alder has these little species of bacteria that mm-hmm. live in the roots, or on the roots, actually. They create little nodules off of root hairs, and it's called Frankia, I believe is this one. And Frankia is a nitrogen-fixing bacteria. Live in the roots, so they make nitrogen out of the soil and out of the air, whatever comes down from to it, and then gives it to the tree, and the tree then gives it these other nutrients and photosynthates, sugars essentially coming down from the tree.
It's a good trade.
Yeah, it's a great trade. Everyone's really super stoked. Some of this nitrogen goes back into the soil, or maybe it falls from the leaves. But it turns out that it's actually a little more complicated than that. They thought literally, oh, this it literally just comes from the leaves and decaying material. That's how nitrogen comes back in the soil. Suzanne was like, I bet you it's a little more complicated than that. She noticed that there is all these mycorrhizal fungi underneath these trees. And I bring up alder, and we'll come back to that in a second.
Okay.
So she also noticed that there are mycorrhizal connections between Douglas fir and the white birch.
Wow.
The paper birch. They call them both.
Specifically the two of those.
Exactly.
Hmm.
And there turns out that there are several different species, I think like up to 10 or more, that will be a mycorrhizal fungi between these two unrelated species. Hmm. So they are what we call host generalists, where
they
can grab onto anyone around them.
Okay.
Now, they tend to like to focus on certain species so that they would maybe want to do only things in the pine family, only things in the birch family, that kind of thing. Sometimes they're only birch, sometimes they're only Douglas fir, they're only this species of pine or something like that.
Wait, then how are they generalists?
Sorry, I was also giving examples of other kinds.
Oh.
So yes, so I should go back. There are host generalists, which can do everything. Yeah, I moved on without telling anyone I was moving on. Anyway, next slide.
That's never happened before.
That's weird, yeah. So there's a host generalist, sorry, which will latch on to just about anybody. They'll be like, yeah, whatever. You got roots, I'm into it. Some will, or some trees, though, only want ectomycorrhizal. Some only want endomycorrhizal. Some are just like, it'll only take ericoid mycorrhizal. So if you are a host generalist mycorrhizal, you're just like, whoever's around and you're into it, I'm into it. Whereas the host specific are like, whoever's around named Douglas, only Douglas.
Quick question.
Go.
Who is choosing whom?
Ooh.
Is the fun, because you've yeah. swapped a couple different times in describing the relationships uh-huh. between the trees and the fungi.
Yeah.
So is the fungi choosing the tree, or is the tree choosing the fungi, or both in different circumstances?
I think it's both.
Okay.
So there are some that have developed relationships, and these are, so the two trees, or the tree and the fungus, have developed these symbiotic relationships. Mm-hmm. Who chose whom, I don't know.
Sure.
It's just that this tree has developed the ability to connect with these fungi. And these fungi have developed the ability to connect with these trees. But sometimes there are very specific fungi who will only go to, and these are species, that will only be connected to the Douglas fir.
Okay.
And then there are others that will connect to the Douglas fir and this species of pine and the larch and the birch and the alder. And they don't really care.
So it sounds like the fungi is sort of the active agent in the relationship.
Yeah, the trees are growing there, hoping to connect to something.
It's sending the first text.
I think that's probably the case. Like, I think they're almost, I have to admit, they are sending the first text, but it's a little bit like, hey, I want you, because the trees are what's giving all the energy and everything down.
Right, yeah.
So the trees are just sucking down energy and kind of putting energy out there. Then the text comes that says, hey, You wanna hang out? Like, you cool? I'm cool if you're cool.
I saw in the news you won the lottery.
Yeah.
So we haven't connected in so long.
Oh my God. Amazing. Yeah. I just went bankrupt. All the other trees died.
Right. They really come out of the woodwork, don't they?
Oh God. Turn off your microphone, Alex. My God.
That was unintentional, truly.
Ew, okay. That was okay. All right. I'll give you a pass.
I'm just naturally witty.
You are, I mean, everyone knows that.
No, you can't agree with me. Then I was being serious.
Sorry. Yeah, you're not Alex. Jesus Christ.
Thank you.
So it's complicated in that regard. So the tree's sprout grows. Like a seedling pops, it puts out, it's called radical. And the radical is that very first root that starts to go down. That root that starts going down is literally looking for any fungus around that is a buddy.
Okay.
Once it finds that buddy fungus then says, hey, I'm with you. Let's make a connection. They connect. Some fungus will be like, oh, sorry, I'm only into larches. This isn't going to work out.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they move on.
Okay.
So, but there are so many fungus everywhere. I mean, literally, spores are everywhere. They're ubiquitous in our world. But in the forest, even more so, and there's already like soil fungus just chilling there, just waiting. Or they're already connected to another tree.
Mm. Oh, sorry.
There you go. Thanks, Alex. So, but that's these kind of unraveling story that Suzanne Simard started to like figure out.
I see.
So she's like, wow, okay. So there are big trees that have this these fungus already on them. Then little trees start to grow next to it, and that like new cohort of little trees are underneath the shade of this big tree. Those little trees connect to the same mycorrhizal fungi network that big tree is connected to. It could be just literally one fungus, like Rhizopogon is the name, and it's this false truffle species. Hmm. And that false truffle species will connect to a Douglas fir and another Douglas fir. And then now they're connected. They could be different species. I'm sorry, not different species. Different individuals from different families, like different groups. Like this seed came from those Douglas firs. This tree is genetically distinct from that tree.
Okay.
As long as they're Douglas firs, Rhizopogon is into it. They'll connect them. So there's these Rhizopogon networks that connect all these individual trees. Does that sound like competition to you, Alex?
No.
Where they're all connecting together?
It sounds like community, if I'm honest.
It does, and this is the thing. So this, I usually try to keep a line like disconnected from like, you know, too much anthropomorphizing.
You don't want too much heart in these stories.
I don't.
I think rightly so.
Exactly. I want to make sure that I'm not being like too, you know, frilly about things and say, wow, it's so beautiful. I'm going to be like, well, okay, that would be nice, but it maybe isn't quite like that.
Right. That dog isn't smiling at you. It's snarling at you.
Exactly. You got to get that. You got to sort that out.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out that Suzanne was also thinking as a scientist, but thinking there's got to be something here, because right now I'm seeing these connections through the mycorrhizal fungi between a birch tree, white birch, Betula paperifera, and the Douglas fir.
Hmm.
It turns out that the two trees need each other. And this is
wow.
The literal definition of like an ecosystem. And so you have the birch tree, and it is a better, faster grower than the Douglas fir, especially when it's young, because the birch tree can just shoot up way quicker. It photosynthesizes faster. It's chosen the hare over the tortoises in terms of strategies.
Okay.
The Douglas fir grows a little bit slower, and it can't quite get up to pace. So over time, you see this competition happening, and you have this new birch overtakes this little Douglas fir.
Surprising.
Exactly. So you're like, okay, but it totally makes sense. Competition killed the birch tree.
Sure.
It turns out when you kill the birch tree, the Douglas fir then struggles. So the question is, well, what was happening? They were actually sharing their nutrients.
Wow, through the mycorrhizal fungi.
Through the mycorrhizal fungi.
Casey.
This was stunning. That's reading about this.
Amazing. Alex.
What I know, can you even like you, for first you're like, oh wow, that's nice. They're buddies. But it turns out it's way bigger than that.
Yeah. Well, let's hear how.
What happens is the birch tree needs the Douglas fir later in life, whereas the Douglas fir doing its lovely tortoise dance ends up getting way bigger than the birch tree. Not only does it get bigger, it will last for way longer. So it turns out at the very beginning, the Douglas fir needs the birch. And between the two of them, they connect with the same mycorrhizal fungi.
Mm-hmm.
That fungi wants everybody to win. And the reason the fungi wants everybody to win is because if anybody loses and dies, if that fungus was only on that tree,
yeah,
it dies too.
Right.
Because a lot of these are obligates. So if it is an obligate for the Douglas fir, it's in the fungus's interest to connect to as many Douglas firs as it possibly can.
Wow.
Connecting all those Douglas firs. Then there's this idea of a deficit between the different amounts of things in plants. The idea is if you have a high concentration of something over here and you have a low concentration over here,
mm-hmm.
that those two kinds of different levels of concentration through essentially osmosis will want to become in equilibrium. So you'll slowly get the higher concentrations
right.
to melt into the lower concentrations until they're the same.
We've used this analogy before, putting a hot pot off the stove onto a cool marble countertop.
Uh-huh.
They will eventually reach the same temperature.
Exactly. It's the perfect thing. So between this this thing, it's a very easy, simple concept to kind of figure out, like, how is it going? Like, you're going from, as she describes it, a source to a sink. So your Douglas fir has basically doesn't have as many sugars and carbon because it's not as big and it's getting overshadowed, so it's in more shade. So the birch is taking all that carbon, all that photosynthesis, and it's putting it down into the roots. When it goes into the roots, it then goes into the fungus that's there. That fungus then is like, great, now I got some, I'm going to eat it. But then over here, there's a sink, there's a deficit of this carbon. So then the carbon naturally moves over to the roots of the Douglas fir. The Douglas fir then can take it up through that fungus.
You say sink, S-I-N-K?
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
I was thinking S-Y-N-K, which could also make sense.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
S-Y-N-C, excuse me.
They are synced to sink. Yeah.
Wow.
Yes, that's great. Yes, this is S-I-N-K, is in a source and a sink, where you have a source of something and a sink, which is where that thing is basically taken.
Okay.
And where it one place creates it, the other place uses it up.
That's very interesting. Can I guess where you're going with this story?
Yes.
That later in life,
uh-huh.
the fungi takes something from the Douglas fir and gives it to the birch.
Exactly right.
That's very cool.
It's so cool. And it turns out that this switches just over time.
Yeah.
And because at one point the Douglas fir is like, now I'm the dominant bear in this little hole.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the birch is like, now I can't get very much light. I can only get like these remnants that come through.
Yeah.
But it's still connected through that mycorrhizal fungi network. So then all of a sudden you get the same exact thing, but then the motion switches.
Wow.
The direction switches, and then the Douglas fir is now supplementing the birch tree.
I mean, you know what? we voted you into power, Douglas Fir. Now give something back to the people.
Yeah, exactly. But what's funny about this is that it also, the Birch also does other things. The Birch has, during that that little quick switch where it starts sending down different carbon stuff, some of that just kind of gets released into the soil, just like it just escapes for whatever reason. So as the fungus is doing other things, there are other things in the soil, like this bacillus bacteria. This bacillus bacteria is creating nitrogen in the soil. That nitrogen is getting taken up by the fungus and given to both trees. Turns out it's also a really good habitat, for whatever reason, around birches for another fungus, or I'm sorry, another bacteria called Pseudomonas. Pseudomonas, have you heard of this?
No. Oh, I looked up ponderously trying to figure out what that might mean as far as Latin.
Yeah.
Pseudo, of course, false.
Yeah, so it's a false Monas, probably.
Monas, okay.
Whatever that means.
It's like the Mona Lisa.
Yeah, it's a fake, though.
Wow.
Yeah, this is the kind that you would steal from.
Sacre-bou, it's a fake. Yeah.
Oh! Pseudomonas. Turns out that this little guy, the Pseudomonas, Alex, can't happen. Was my accent too good? Too bad.
It was all funny.
It was just all funny.
I got tickled.
Well, when I was doing arboriculture up in Seattle, we would recommend that people inoculate their areas, their land, because of the effects that Pseudomonas has on getting rid of the soil pathogen known as armillaria.
Inoculate, what is that?
That means essentially infect with. But infect has a bad connotation. So they'd say, get yourself inoculated to COVID-19. That's putting your shot in your arm and giving yourself your inoculated. So people saw that. So it's usually a term that is used with fungus things. So like if you inoculate something with fungal spores.
You're putting the fungus into it.
Exactly.
Okay. Like a log, growing mushrooms in a log.
Yes, precisely. All right. They literally use that term.
Cool.
So the Pseudomonas, for whatever reason, it fights and actually gets armillaria root fungus to decline in an area.
Wow.
So, as we were saying before, if you are a tree that has no defenses, this armillaria will attack your roots and kill you, and then you die. So, if you are a birch tree growing, you get a fungal network that's growing out. Mm-hmm. It, for whatever reason, makes that area where you are, because of this, all these different interactions and processes, really good for this nitrogen-fixing bacteria and this bacteria that fights against armillaria. That creates exceptional conditions for who? The Douglas fir.
I was going to say it.
You just stared directly at me. I was like, uh-oh, he didn't connect.
Well, no, if I'm being honest.
You may.
Sometimes you ask a question and you answer it yourself.
Oh, I see.
So I thought you were setting yourself up for a...
Gotcha.
But I did know the answer.
Okay, you were letting me...
I thought you were going to take the reins on the reveal.
Yeah, next time we should get like signs that says like, this one's for you. Like hold it up so we know when to answer each other.
Do you want to do it again? Let's do it again.
Okay.
And I'm not going to edit this out.
And so the birch tree, through its interactions with the fungus, creates these conditions where these two other bacteria create great nitrogen and help get rid of armillaria, making that new area deliciously perfect for who?
Douglas fir.
Alex, how did you know?
Yeah.
God.
That's a great reveal.
You're a good listener.
Thank you.
So it turns out that this Douglas fir grows the best when grown in a place that is just chock full of birch trees. Now, I should take it back. Not chock full, because at one point it might just be that they do get outcompeted by like a dog hair thick, like a canopy of nothing but birch trees.
Sure.
But if there is a certain balance that you can create, the Douglas fir and pines and larches and other species that grow up there will be perfectly happy, and they will grow together. Maybe they won't grow together as quickly as you would ever want as a forester. Maybe they aren't going to be growing at the same spacing or something like that, because you have to plant them and they kind of end up growing wherever they all these things come into balance.
But in the right condition, They groove.
And they groove for so much longer and quicker in the long term.
Wow.
Which we're talking about trees here, so we have to always think in the long term, where these short-term gains where you can kill everything, add a bunch of fertilizer, burn the ground, plant the trees,
yeah.
That's good. They're going to grow and they're going to look like they're going to be great, but then they're just going to kick the bucket because the soil is not built to sustain them because all of their other homies have gone away. So it brings us back, Alex, to the question of competition versus
cooperation.
Well said. It turns out that what Suzanne Simard has kind of figured out, and I don't want to put her, she's on a pedestal because she's an incredible researcher on the cutting edge. Many other people have done this. In fact, she names many other researchers who she said, I saw that this other person saw this, so I wanted to test it out myself.
Yeah.
They had found that you have a big tree that she calls it the mother tree. That mother tree is like this network hub.
Okay.
And it is like just destroying it up there, just crushing photosynthesis. And it takes all that photosynthesis, puts it into its trunk, its roots. That thing goes to maybe over 60 or 100 different species of mycorrhizal fungi on that one tree alone.
Hmm.
Those generalists and those specialist fungi will all be connected to other Douglas firs or other birches or other trees or other plants of any different kind throughout this entire ecosystem, including herbs and all these other things, making some habitats better for other plants, but then worse for others, or worse for other species like armillaria, which is a root disease. Armillaria will go and kill and eat these things that are stressed, and it has its place because that's just succession of life in a forest. But you also get these trees giving nutrients and pulling water up from the ground and then giving it to through the fungal networks and this balance that they created with this deficit kind of this pressure deficit kind of thing, where you end up getting a whole entire forest ecosystem that is functioning not out of competition almost at all. In fact, the instant these trees are starting to grow as seedlings, they're connecting to the network that's underground.
Right.
And that is the basis for their success. So if they're the basis for all their success is connecting to this network where things are shared, whether or not the trees know it, which people would argue that they do. Some trees will tell if it's their offspring, not the offspring of a different Douglas fir, that it's giving its nutrients to.
Really?
I haven't read that far into the book or gotten too far into that in terms of my research. But yes, this is a fact. People are noticing these things. So it all of a sudden realizes or makes you realize that we are as humans just barely scratching the surface of understanding. And right now it is just becoming so apparent how crude our understanding is that everything is in competition.
Yeah.
It turns out that yes, I'm sure there is an amount of competition out there, but that competition is also very much a cooperative thing, where if you are growing as a big tree, you want a bunch of other trees around you because then they can help you when you are stressed.
Yeah.
And it goes back and forth, just like the birch, just like the Douglas fir.
Casey, a fascinating tale. I want to get into our review because I have a lot to say.
I want to hear what you have to say. Do you want to go first?
No, I would never break tradition in such a way.
That's
fair. Here's how it works. We're going to give some final thoughts on this tree, Papyrifera betula. Strike that. Reverse it. And then give it a cone rating of 0 to 10, golden cones of honor. Casey is a resident expert. We begin with you.
All right. Alex, I do not want to see any more birches planted in the urban area whatsoever. Thank you very much.
Let's hit our butt it's overplanted button.
Yeah. Oh my God. The birch growing out in the forest, doing its thing and making other trees plant or other trees that are growing survive and thrive. What a spectacular species.
Yeah.
It also is used to make birch bark canoes. It has waterproof stuff. You can make a little kindling out of it. You can find chaga mushrooms growing on it and make a delicious tea out of it.
Wow.
All these different things. Spectacular. Wonderful. Every time I see one in the urban area, I just want to cut it down. Here's why. It's two reasons. One, overplanted. So overplanted. Everyone only wants to see a birch because of this bark. They're just like, oh, the bark is so pretty. Plant it. Great.
It's not that pretty.
It's not that pretty, but that's people love it.
It's
like
trendy.
They just think they're so beautiful. Yeah, which they are. I think the bark is lovely. I think it's lovely bark. I'll give it its bark. However, as a tree grows older, as I noted at the beginning, it looks like this very loosely poofy, you know, there's nothing like grandiose or like overly like stunning about the whole crown of the tree and its architecture. It's just kind of this thing that generally wants to grow up, get kind of big, then get overtaken and grow in this weird, swilly, circuitous way in this semi-mid-story, like, you know, elevator stop number 4 or 5 on the building of the canopy. That's what I think. Meanwhile,
How big is the building?
Context. Sorry, I guess it's like a 7 or 8 story building.
Okay,
yeah, and then it dies, and then never the building keeps growing bigger.
Got it.
Then we also have this horrible insect that's coming around. I don't want to say it's horrible; it's just doing its thing. Can't blame the insect. It is called the bronze birch borer, BBB.
BBB?
The bronze birch borer will eat and attack the paper birch, the Himalayan birch, the European white birch, any birch that is basically hanging out that's not, I think, the river birch, I think, is pretty well, can withstand it. What am I thinking? What's the word? Resistant.
Mm.
But the paper birch dies so quickly and so thoroughly from these trees, or from these insects, that people plant them all over the place, and they're like, they're great, but these trees also cannot take the hot, awful conditions where we plant them. So we plant them, they end up falling apart, and you just get this, like, dead thing that's there. In the forest, love it to death.
Yeah.
You, everyone, hang out, stay, you're great, I love you. Inside the city, plant maybe one somewhere where it's very cushy, and don't let it anywhere near any of these insects, and maybe it'll be fine. Otherwise, overplanted, overdone, get them out, put them in the forest. It's 5.2.
All right.
I'm going to give it a 5.2, and that extra 2, generous, because I don't like ending on zeros.
Okay.
Should I go down to 4.9? Hmm.
Hey, your cones are your own.
4.9.
Okay.
There are other trees that I like a little bit better.
That was a passionate soliloquy, Casey.
Ah, God, I feel so. This always takes it out of me when I have to just whip myself back into reality after talking about this in such a dreamy fashion.
Right.
I need to go out and go touch one so I can kind of like make sure it knows I know that it knows that I know.
You need
know?
To commune.
Yeah, I do. I need to commune. But I got to go like way out to the Wallawas. They don't really grow down the Cascades or anything. We have to find different birches.
Hmm. All right. 4.9? 5.2.
I think it's a 4.9. And then if you really look closer, 5.2.
Okay.
In the forest, completely different story, but this is not what we're talking about.
Yes. All right. Fair
Alex,
enough.
I'm sorry I'm worked up.
No, that's good. Get worked up. I'm sorry I can't meet you there. I'm very tired.
It's okay. I want to see someone else. I want to hear what other people have to say about this. Mostly you.
Well, here it goes. Thank you for that setup.
Mm-hmm.
I think the paper birch is just okay.
Oh, thank God.
I don't think it's you know, sometimes a tree will have a very unique characteristic, and that's what really makes it for me, you know?
In this one, it would be the bark, surely.
Yes, exactly. But this unique characteristic, I don't think is that cool or interesting.
Oh.
I think it looks a little shaggy.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it's a shag bark. Shag bark birch.
Shag bark birch. They're all shag bark birches.
There you go.
Pretty much.
I'm not feeling all that passionate about this tree. However, I love the tale you spun.
The tale of two trees.
Yes, the tale of two trees. Mm-hmm. You know, it reminded me a lot of sort of parentage and child rearing.
Oh.
You know, the parent gives resources to the child as it's growing up, but eventually the parent needs help and asks the child for help in return.
Oh, I
and
see.
And the child, now grown, gives help back to the parent.
I gotcha.
I love that. I love that story. Shout out to Suzanne. We'd love to have you on the pod.
We'd love to have you on the pod. We know she's a listener.
I think we tried at one point, didn't we?
No, we talked to like a publicist guy who reached out to us and was like, do you want Suzanne Simard on your podcast? And we're like, yeah, we would.
And then he never followed up.
Yeah, he never followed up. I think we followed up several times. So yes, anyway, hit us up.
Paper birch. I'm just feeling like a 4.4.
I think it's fair.
Yeah.
I think that's fair. It's
below middling.
Exactly.
It doesn't have enough of it has no appeal, which is ironic because its bark is
it's a god. Oh. That was too much, Alex.
That was our review of The Paper Birch. Kind of a stinker.
Kind of too a bad. Stinker. I know. That's. I feel like this is always the worst part about this, where the story we tell, hopefully, is just everyone has stars in their eyes about becoming researchers and solving our crisis. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, we're just like, but also, keep it in the forest.
Right.
Okay.
Don't forget, people, these scorings are arbitrary. It's time for a game. One we love and adore. This is The Family Tree. It's a common condition in this day and age for Casey and Alex to anthropomorphize a tree. Is it Zeus of Olympus or Saruman? Some people say it's even Admiral Thrawn. Deep cut. You know there must be some kind of rules inside this stupid game. All we can see is an opportunity for a segment for completely arbitrary. Maybe Jean-Luc Picard is an elm of some kind. And the kid from Up is a Ponderosa pine. There's room for yews and mahoganies. There's room for the hosts to disagree. It's a podcast game called The Family Tree. Casey, here's how it works as always.
Love that.
I'm going to introduce some group of characters from some canon. It could be the cast of a sitcom. It could be the Greek gods, the pantheon. We will then assign each of them a tree based on their personality, physical appearance, and characteristics. Mm-hmm. Casey, in honor of the paper birch, to give it a little bit of love.
A little bit.
We have decided today our family tree will be the characters from Dunder Mifflin, the paper company, from The Office.
Oh, the American version, I assume.
Yes, I mean, I would love to do the British version.
Yeah.
I don't have. Are you familiar with the British version?
In almost no way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then we will do, the characters are somewhat similar.
Yeah,
but
I'm the kind of person who's like, there's a British version.
What?
That's how much I know.
You know that there is a British version.
Yes, and okay. That's where it ends.
God, what a great show. It's one of the best. However, a few seasons of the US one are also good.
Wow.
So Casey, we're gonna talk about a handful of characters here. Let's start with one of my favorite characters from television of all time. Michael Scott.
Michael Scott.
He is the manager of the Scranton, Pennsylvania branch of Dunder Mifflin.
Okay.
Would you like to know a little bit about Michael?
Yes, please.
He's played by Steve Carell. Michael Scott is dumb.
Okay.
He is childlike. He is inappropriate and obscene.
Okay.
He also is a sweetheart.
Mm,
he is so tender and loving. And he cares about his employees like they're his own family because he doesn't really have one of his own.
He
doesn't have very many friends or family that he loves. So he's built this office and he sees himself as sort of the dad of the office, but he's also a fucking dunce.
Yeah, he's not that smart. That's what I know the most about him, is that he's kind of a dunce is the perfect word for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. He's a fool.
Yeah.
But he's a lovable fool.
He's
a real sweetheart. All he wants is love. What do you think, Case?
Ooh, okay. So the things I'm trying to pick up on is it's a bit of a dunce. It's a tree that everyone's kind of like, oh my God. Like, you roll your eyes a little bit. But also, there's some people who love it, and it's one of your favorite trees, you know, all the time. Everyone's like, that tree.
You can't stay mad at it.
You can't stay mad at it, but you do kind of always get really mad at it.
Mm.
I think that it is the most like a Norway maple. That's what I'm calling for Michael Scott. Now, the reason I'm choosing this is that the Norway maple is a tree that everyone hates. It's a lovable tree. It's planted in almost every city across the United States, everywhere, all the time.
Yeah.
We clearly love this tree. But at the same time, everyone also almost unanimously hates this tree.
Sure.
They're like, this is the worst tree. It lets down so many leaves. It is stinky. I don't know why they say that, but I'm sure they do. People here think it's semi-invasive in the Portland area. It's not going to take over anything, but you know, it's technically invasive. Some people think it's a liliopathic, which is not quite true because it's just a dense crown. So it's a tree that everyone's just like, but it's also like a little tree that's always kind of a bit of a silly tree. You see it and you're like, you don't like, no one respects a Norway maple for being like, I'm a big Norway maple.
Right.
Like, no, shut up. No one cares.
Interesting. Okay.
That's what I see. But then there are some people, my good friend Dan, who's just like, he loves a Norway maple. He thinks it's the best. He'll stand by that Norway maple until it falls down.
Wow. I was going to say Japanese cherry.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, 9/10 of the year, it's just like a, tree.
Yeah. You're just like, oh my God, I don't care about you.
Yes. And then once a year, once in a while, it just stuns you and it's so lovable and beautiful. Then a week later, it's back to its shit.
And you're just like, oh, why did that not last?
And then, yeah, maybe in the middle of winter, you're like, just remember how beautiful it can be.
Yeah.
Okay. That was my idea.
That feels really good. I like that a lot.
All right.
That feels good. I like it. I like the aesthetic variety versus the metaphysical idea of it.
Yes. Well, it takes all kinds, Casey.
It sure does.
It takes all cones.
It takes all cones.
Speaking of it taking all cones, let's talk about Dwight Schrute.
Oh, what a lovely, lovely character.
Played by Rainn Wilson.
Yep.
Dwight is a prick, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's the way to do it.
Over competitive.
Right?
He is childish. Mm-hmm. He is annoying.
Yeah.
He is a stickler for rules.
Mm.
He's a narc. He thinks his abilities are greater than they are.
Huh.
He has this weird inflated sense of himself.
Yeah.
That time and time again proved to be incorrect. He thinks he's, you know, this sort of like warrior type. In the UK version, the Dwight character is named Gareth, Gareth Keenan.
Okay.
And he's a part of he says he's in the army.
Yeah.
But he's in the territorial army, the comparison would be like the army reserve. Like he's never seen
combat
and he probably never will.
Gotcha.
But he wears, it's like a security guard being like, I'm basically a cop.
Okay. All right. I see. That makes total sense.
He's also incredibly loyal.
Mm-hmm.
He also owns and operates a beet farm. I don't know if that's helpful.
Oh no, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
that's so curious. So he's certainly not a liliopathic.
No, he's like a weird like farmer nerd.
Yeah,
because he's really into beet farming, but he's also like into video games and probably like D&D and stuff.
Oh God. Okay. All
and
right.
Like karate. Okay. You know,
this is hard. This is pretty hard.
Are there any trees that are really competitive and grow really fast, but then like will fall over in a rainstorm?
Yeah. The Paulownia and the Tree of Heaven will do that.
Oh,
often.
The Tree of Heaven.
Yeah. There's also one. It's another maple. It's another Norway maple. I think it's called the Crimson Century Norway maple. That's what I'm going to call Dwight Schrute. Here's why. It looks beautiful, doesn't it? Yeah.
It looks like the 1990s to me.
It does. Perfect. That's a great example. It's another maple. It's actually a variety of Norway maple, which I think works for me here. And it grows with this really dark purple foliage, which everyone thinks is so gorgeous. They're like, oh, we got to plant that gorgeous, beautiful maple tree with that really dark, really purple foliage.
Yeah.
But literally, you can walk by, you can find one of these trees in the city of Portland right now. Go walk up to it and shake it with your hand, and the thing will just quiver because it never puts down roots.
There you go.
Like, you could knock it over if you tried right now.
I love that.
I hate this tree. This is my least favorite tree I've ever seen.
Wow.
Anytime one is like newly planted in the streets of Portland, I really want to go and actually rip it up because it won't take any effort.
I like that.
You could do it. A child could do it.
That's great.
Yeah.
I think that works really well. And it's beet red.
And it is beet red.
How
yeah, that's
that?
For sure. Yeah, but uncooked and boiled at the same time.
Yes. Our next character.
Okay.
Let's go Jim Halpert. Jim is, if anything, a straight man on this show.
Okay.
In this office full of loony bins.
I see what you're saying. He's a straight shooter there.
Yeah, he's just like, he's like, quote, the normal one, you know?
Yeah.
I guess.
Who stays for too long.
Yeah. Did you just read that?
No, I'm just looking, but I happen to know, like, if you're the, you know, if you're the one who, like, gets it, why wouldn't you leave? You
right.
Know? Why yes. is he still there?
Totally. Well,
this is what I have.
I think there probably he has his reason. Well, he certainly has one reason, which will be our next character.
I see. Okay.
Jim is, I don't know. I'm not a huge Jim fan. He's clever. He's intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
He's also extremely petty and kind of a bully.
Oh.
He is. He's not a real go-getter. He's fine underperforming.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
But he has great potential.
Ooh.
I have maybe a direction to go.
Okay, take us.
What about something that like is really beautiful but is just a shrub?
Yeah, something that is fine just being a shrub.
Yeah, but if it were a tree, it would be like a pretty cool tree.
Be an amazing tree.
Yeah,
rhododendron.
Hey, that's pretty good.
That's what I say. Every now and then is beautiful, but is not going to try to become a tree. Is always fine in the understory. And is, you know, kind of normal. Everyone's got one. There's 1,000 of them. Some of them are outstanding. Some of them are just pretty boring.
I love that, Casey.
All right. Okay,
cool. I think that's almost the perfect answer.
A beautiful rhododendron. Jim Halpert, hit us up if you think otherwise.
And then like a rhododendron, if you go underneath the foliage, you can see that it's single stemmed.
Yeah, like, exactly.
This could be a tree.
You could do this.
Yeah.
What are you... God, and you're just disappointed a little bit?
That's the answer.
All right.
Casey, our final character here, one of my big high school crushes. I'm talking Pam Beasley.
Pam Beasley.
Ladies and gentlemen. Pam Beasley is soft-spoken, very sweet. She's an artist.
Yeah, I've always found that, but for lack of a better term, gets stepped on a lot.
For sure. She's the butt of many situations, I think, especially with Michael. He treats her like a personal assistant.
Yes, yeah.
She is an artist, but I would say she's, in the show, she's supposed to be like an okay artist.
Ah, okay.
She's like a fine drawer, you know?
Like, not you're not going to be like, wow. You'll be like, wow.
She's not like an undiscovered talent, but she's, you know, she has a hobby.
Okay.
A big characteristic early on is that she is in a completely loveless engagement. With a fool of a man named Roy.
Roy?
Never
heard of Roy.
Roy sucks, and they've been engaged for like 3 years.
Oh, geez.
And she stays in this relationship because... She, you know, doesn't believe that she deserves better, even though she's in love with Jim. They're in love with each other.
And that's been known for a long time, right?
I think from the first episode, it's like these two are definitely vibing.
It's very clear. Okay. Yeah, I see. Okay. All right. Oh.
Now, ladies.
Pam Beasley. Oh, I see what you're doing. Uh-huh. Okay.
What do you think, Case?
What I see here is something that's understated. A tree that doesn't quite get what it needs and is kind of like walked on all the time, but can stand up for itself, but also isn't that pretty? Because it's art. It's not that good.
She does also eventually earn her courage.
Doesn't she also later become a salesperson also?
She does, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And she gets the guy. Her and Jim get together, you know.
Okay.
She does call off her engagement in before this all happens.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So she moves on. Okay. So she finds her courage and can then stand up. So this is a slow growing tree.
Yes. It takes her a while. Yeah.
Then becomes a full fledged thing.
And it might not look like much until it has grown into itself, and then. Oh, wow, this is a great tree.
Okay.
I love this game.
This is so challenging.
I love watching you, not flounder, but, you know, stretch your knowledge of trees.
Yeah, and, like, really, you got to think of a lot of different things here. Okay, so at the beginning, it's not much, but then it can become something extraordinary.
But it's still lovable. I don't want to paint a picture of her that she's, like, a dud.
Yeah, so the first thing...
She's very funny and fun.
Mm-hmm, yeah. You know? She is. All right. So the first thing I think of, Alex, is it doesn't really fit, but I'm going to go with it anyway. It's the longleaf pine.
Oh.
The longleaf pine lives its first like several years in what they call a grass stage.
Wow.
Where it just stays really low with this big poof of needles just kind of coming out. It looks like a literal like tuft of grass. And then a fire comes over and burns all the needles off. And then the next year, the tree grows like 3 feet.
Casey, you don't even know how perfect this is.
Yeah? Is
that
good?
Can I explain to you?
You may.
A fire comes through, and right after that, it grows 3 feet.
Yeah, and becomes like a full-fledged tree because it's just waiting for that fire because it knows it's going to come.
There's an episode of The Office in season 4, I want to say, called Beach Games, or Beach Day.
Okay.
Beach Games, I think. Where Pam literally works up the courage to walk across a bed of coals. She goes directly from there to Jim and tells him how she feels about him.
No way!
Yeah, and then the next episode, they get together.
Oh, God.
You don't even know how great that is.
Okay.
Well done, yes.
There we go.
Perfect.
So, yeah, Pam is a longleaf pine. Pine's palustrous.
She just needs a little fire to get her engine going, and then she takes off.
And then she just takes off. She shoots straight into the sky.
Love it!
Oh, wow.
How about that? Sometimes really works out, huh?
What fun.
That was Family Tree. I liked that one, Case.
Yeah, that felt good. That felt really good.
Yeah, that was a fun time for all.
Okay.
Hopefully our listeners, too.
Yeah, everyone's like, eh.
it was okay. Casey, it's time for a completely arbitrary Q&A.
Okay, let's do it.
Casey, this week our question is from Izzy.
Hi, Izzy.
They also signed Isabel, so let's say maybe Isabel. Dear Casey and Alex, how do I make friends with the trees in my neighborhood and show them that I love them?
Oh, that is such a sweet question.
Yeah.
Easy. Okay.
I like these ones.
It's easy. I know exactly how to do it.
It's Izzy.
Oh, okay. So it is, this is how I do it at least. And I feel personally that the trees and I are on good terms.
Yeah, you have a rapport.
Yeah, so I would just go walking around. Many times, especially during the pandemic, I would just like get a beer and just like pop it and just go out to my doorstep and take a left.
Mm.
And just go walk up and down the streets. You're going to feel a little bit like a crazy person because you are like just going to stop and look thoroughly at the trees that are around you.
Okay.
So I try to do it by identifying them to like note like the specificity. Like you see a yard. You see that yard 100 times, but have you ever stopped and looked to see what is growing at each point in that yard?
Mm.
Where's it growing? How is it growing? Is it doing something weird? Is that a big old gigantic tree that everyone like didn't know about? Wow, there it is. That's how I found a bunch of different species randomly. I'm like, huh, look at that. There's that tree right there.
Yeah.
It's just a block away, just like that. That is how I do it. The way you show them love is by walking around and just giving them literally the time of day.
Hmm.
I tend to do it on the weekends, or a lot of times it was after work or something like that. I would just decide, hey, I'm just going to go take it easy. I'm just going to go walk for a little while. And I would walk until I'm halfway done with the beer, then turn around and walk back. That way I always got back without being like, I'm just walking around with a beer or something. Anyway, during the pandemic especially, you know, you couldn't go anywhere else. So that was like the easiest, best way to do it.
Yeah.
And just like take some time. Other than putting together a podcast, you know, that's the second best thing you could
do. Oh, right. We did that.
Whoops. But it was a lot of fun to just go out and like give a very like a directional unintentional gander at some things, rather than just being like, I'm going to go look at the trees. Go and like try to identify it, see what's interesting about it, find if there's some fungus growing on the edge of it,
yeah.
And then move to the next one. You don't have to stop at every single tree, but maybe every time you see one that's even kind of interesting, stop and look at it and ask it its name, ask it what it's doing that day, that kind of thing.
Walk around it. Are you of the mind that, because many people will say, you know, I think there was a book about this potentially, that like talking to your house plants, giving them attention literally helps them grow more, healthier. Are you somebody who believes that that is based at all in scientific
fact? Almost like the power of positive thought to get your plants to like overcome their armillaria root disease,
and trees too, you know, like is hugging a tree really act, does the tree even know? I mean,
I've had that question before. Does the tree know you're hugging it?
Yeah.
Well, maybe. I bet you the tree definitely knows you're hugging it. Does it know it's a hug? Probably not.
Sure.
You know, it's like you hold a small wild animal. Does that animal know that you're like gently moving it from here to there? Or is it like, I'm about to be crushed to death?
Right.
Who knows? I'm sure the tree's not afraid of you. I think trees are very much afraid of almost nothing. But I don't think so. Honestly, maybe the closest thing is, again, the pseudoscience book we talked about the other day, which you were like, we got to buy this book. The Secret Life of Plants or something?
Yes, yeah.
In that book, they basically say, in other places have argued that stimulation, literally the sound vibrations, mm-hmm. were positive. There's another study, I think, that read, if you what music do you play that makes plants, like houseplants, grow better? And it was like complex orchestral kind of things, or like death metal.
Right.
And they're like, what do these things have in common? Like, the only thing is that the number of like vibrations per second are really high versus like folk or something like that.
Oh, interesting.
So it'd almost be like a physical micro vibration stimulus that actually creates a more of a growth in the plants. I don't know.
Well, I like the answer of going on tree walks and appreciating trees. I at the beginning of this whole podcast, I did that exponentially more than mm-hmm. I had. It made me feel good, and I became fond of many of the trees in my neighborhood, the specific trees, you know.
Exactly. Not just like, I like this kind of tree.
Right.
Yeah, that's the best way that I think to do it. The other thing would be, take your friends on tree walks. That, if you really want the trees to like know that you love them, have take the opportunity to take other people out and be like, hey, come on over here. Let's just go walk around my neighborhood and look at all these trees. And then have yourself a little tree tour. It's a bunch of fun. And people love to like interact with people. And all of a sudden, like, oh, yeah, whatever, this is going to be fun. And then they go out, and all of a sudden, you're like spitting off some knowledge. You're like, wow, everyone's like, wow, how do you know this? And then now you're advertising for Completely Arbitrary. I'm just kidding. Don't do that. But that's what I would always suggest, going out and bringing people to talk with trees about. Because if anything, you'll stop talking about the trees, and you'll just have a nice conversation with your friend while you're walking down the street.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that.
Thank you so much, Isabel, for your question. If you have a question about trees, email us at arbitrarypod@gmail.com. That's arbitrarypod@gmail.com. Join us on Instagram at arbitrarypod, or you can support this podcast on Patreon, patreon.com/arbitrarypod. You can join the Arboretum for 2 bonus episodes a month about trees and other related topics, or the Cone of the Month Club.
Beautiful cones.
Get a unique die-cut cone sticker, illustrated by an independent artist, printed by a small local printer, sent to you every single month with an info card and a lot of love. And please, if you love this podcast, rate and review us on your app of choice. It helps us a lot. Casey Clapp.
Alex Croson.
What do you say, guy?
You know, this episode for me has been a roller coaster of emotions.
I agree.
And I hope that everyone else is okay.
You know what? I certainly feel better now than I did at the beginning, right after we had spent 5 hours doing tax shit.
Yeah, that's true. That's it. You just got to talk about trees. Really, this has been therapy for you and I for the last several years.
Mm-hmm.
Feels good.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Au revoir. Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.